Now I'm happy to be here. You have no idea. You have no idea. The happy time we were having before I went live here. I wish we'd had the camera on 5 minutes ago. They would have been dancing in their home. Now, I don't like to be predictable. I said you wouldn't get to hear the Sunday service every Sunday night so you could stay home. And then I've been playing it. And then tonight I'm going to play twice. I'm going to play, that was last Sunday. In the last hour and 7 minutes, we will play this morning. And I'm sandwiched in between. Because if I don't come here live on Sunday night, you don't get your reservations in. I sang a song in the service today. You won't have to hear it tonight because I'm going to cut in later in the service. But Ira Stanfield's old song. Did you get the message? When in place of a cup of water, I put voice of faith.
Sir.
Keeping your commitment.
Yes, sir.
Making your reservations.
Yes, sir.
Volunteering for the cathedral.
Yes, sir.
Well, and I want you to take that cup of water tonight. It's like the song that's one of our portfolio of songs that came out of this ministry. We call it the Pissant Song. We can get, and that's a Missouri term for those little biting pissants. That's what you call them. It's not a curse word. It's, you don't speak accurate Ozarkian if you don't know what pissants are. And like my dad, he used to say, I grew up, and it took my wife, whose native tongue's Italian and French, and I still wonder how she can sing with a southern accent when her natural tongue is Italian and French. But my dad, all my life, I've heard him say, as he sees some people walk by, well, he or she looks like death warmed over. Any of you ever heard that phrase? Death warmed over. Well, I only found out this past week. You know, Old English used to put the past tense, I win, and I won. In the past tense, I won. And the origin of that phrase is death won over. Death won the battle. Death won over. But by the time I matriculated through the Ozarks to my dad and 74 years of my life, it's death warmed over. Words. Words. That's what I keep doing. Words. And explaining them. And trying to make the words have an impact of meaning until our life adjusts. The faith of Jesus is keeping commitment. And when it gets tough, you keep on keeping on. We can't be perfect, but we can keep the faith, finish our course, make a commitment, and be trustworthy. Now, I come here live tonight because I got people that are like death warmed over unless I can stir them up some way or other, and you get your reservations in early enough for us to mail the passes to you. You understand? That's why I'm here. We're buying this expensive time for me to sit here and you call. Call in your reservations. And we're getting close to Christmas. If you don't know what I'm talking about when I say Secret 16, you shouldn't participate. But those who know the time is growing short between now and Christmas. You need to make those commitments. We're moving into tabernacle time. And next Sunday night, in addition to next Sunday, anniversary. I was elected pastor 28 years ago, first Sunday in November. That means I start my 29th year next Sunday. Two services, 11 o'clock at the cathedral, 7 p.m., Shalom service at King's House 1. Voices of Faith can give you the directions. You need to make reservations. You have to have a pass to get into both services. So I'm here live to get you to make those reservations and get them out of the way. So get on telephone right now. I will not have the first song that is played when I'm live here start out with Tweet Tweet. There's no way I will let this program start with Tweet Tweet. I don't care how good the song got after the Tweet Tweet, you're not going to start my program with a Tweet Tweet. Give me a song. I don't care. Let somebody cuss. Don't Tweet Tweet. Give me a man song, not a Tweet Tweet. Find me another song.
Yes, sir.
Boy, that knocked them sideways. All they know how to do is Tweet Tweet. Did somebody kill the sound man?
Yes, sir.
Well, pull his tweeter off and find somebody else. I want a song that doesn't Tweet Tweet. I went up there to kill the sound men. It was all girls, and I couldn't do anything. I mean, I was going to throw him through the wall or through the ceiling or something, and it was women. I couldn't do anything about it. It was girls. Girls! No wonder I got Tweet Tweet. I hate all women until they prove they're more manlike in attitude. I hate women. Is there anybody that doesn't know I hate women? I've been announcing that for 28 years. Of course, you always express overt hatred for that which you covertly love. I hate them because they're superior. And then I hate these three women because they just proved they weren't. That's an insult to the rest of womanhood. Now, how'd I get on this subject? Tweet, tweet. Tweet, tweet. I really couldn't believe a woman would play a tweet tweet. I really believe women are superior. I'm telling you, man, you better know it too so you can resist the feminists. Because if the women ever get on top, we've lost it forever. God's smart. The devil's smart. The devil knew women were superior. He knew if he got Eve, he had Adam. If he got Adam, it didn't mean he'd have Eve. And God was smart. Can you think of a worse curse than making the superior serve the inferior? And that's what he told Eve she had to do. And in my pastoral counseling, which is always done on television, I tell women, not only get a VD exam before you marry a man, get an IQ exam. Because you're going to have to take that vow to obey him. You better make sure. Now, straight across the board, if you had all the women in the world and all the men in the world, some method of finding the smartest, a woman would end up the smartest. A woman would end up with more endurance. Men couldn't carry a baby for 9 months. We'd shoot ourselves in the belly. If I want a job done, I'd get a woman. They are superior beings. That's why I hate them. They're superior. I hate that. But not all women are superior to all men. Most women are superior to this man and to any man I know. But you better marry a smart man, because you're going to have to serve him. And if he's 20 points IQ under you, you're in for a life of misery. And I have to go up there and find three women. My wife was somewhere else dealing with other things. Three women. that when I canceled Tweet Tweet between the three of them, couldn't find a song. There must be 500 songs up in that room. And I go up there ready to... And it's three women. I can't lay hands on a woman. In wrath. Hey, are you serious? I sure am serious. I hate women. Always have hated women. Hate all women. Because they're superior. And all inferior people hate the superior. Now that you can't figure out whether I'm serious or not, maybe you'll listen for the next 3 hours to see. Now, you women up there who have been spared things worse than death that I went up there to do to the man that was responsible. I thought I had a couple of computer nerds up there picking the music. Because, see, we're developing volunteers around here. And the computer nerds that have been picking the music over the last few weeks... You going somewhere?
No, sir.
You're wandering around like you're lost.
Out
of the woman's way? Well, you let me practice the manners to the women in here because I'm so kind to them because I know they're superior. Anyway, now that I got this out of my system, I better not hear another tweet tweet tonight. You three women up there have had plenty of time to find a song now. Put it on. Well, that was a little better than a tweet tweet, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
I hate cowards. You know that?
Yes, sir.
I hate them worse than women. I hate a cowardly woman above all things. Now, this was not exactly what I planned to do tonight. And will some of you get out from behind your sofa and wherever you're hiding and get on the phone and make your reservations right now? Now, I turned very serious. Couldn't tell whether I was serious earlier or not, but now I'm very serious. This Holocaust of the fires, I'm sure touches every church in this greater Los Angeles area, and San Diego also. I asked this morning, any of the congregants of this church, not that we don't care about everyone else, I sit and watch with horror as I can't believe, after being here in the Los Angeles area for 28 years, which is small alongside some others who listen, I've never seen fires like this, and it's as though they can't do anything. I feel sorry for the firemen. I feel sorry for the people. I feel sorry for those that don't know whether their home's gone or not as they're evacuated, and some who see that it's gone or still up as they watch the news. And I ask for the people that are my congregants of this church to call and let us know so we can pray and extend a hand. And I really believe God led me early a year, almost 3 years ago, to take the excursion in faith sideways in this Roman series that's now reached 221 messages, to give you those promises in the 36 messages in Psalms and Isaiah, to give you faith for whatever hits you. Here from Claremont. Now, this is a faithful couple. Interestingly enough, he's a fireman. That many times has helped us as we get ready for fire inspections in our various buildings. He and his wife. We did lose our home and all the contents. Believe me, I know the pain of this. I know the pain, though I had another home to live in, I know the pain that my mother faced when shortly after my dad died, and 70 years of their life and marriage went up in flames at 4 in the morning, the work of an arsonist. the lake home in which they had deposited much of their life. Dad pastored 30 years in Orville and had continually built up and traded up, had a beautiful home on Lake Almanor. All of their memories there and burned to the ground. In fact, I salvaged, didn't think there was anything left, but salvaged two of their old Bibles, partially burned. And I kept them up at the house, but I brought them down this past week and asking to put together on Station 50, Mom and Pop's old Bibles. But I know the pain as I had to give the news to my mother. We did lose our home and all the contents. Our greatest regret is this loss. The greatest regret in this loss is the lithographs we had from you and all the years of VCR tapes. Well, those can both be replaced. Give me a list of your lithographs and I'll give you. You steal the number of lithographs if they burned and nobody else has a number, it's yours. I'll replace it with a duplicate lithograph. Same with the VCR tapes. Those can be replaced. My wife's listening now. Give me a list of the tapes you had or a guess, an estimate, and we'll replace them. Once in a while, one needs a reality check. When a catastrophe like this happens, you face the fact that you came into life with nothing and you leave with nothing except for the treasures one lays up in heaven and the faith you've taught us so well. I look at this as a time of new beginnings, and our faith has only grown stronger, and the expectation of serving our God is so real and so much more important to us. We will keep our voice of faith commitments. We will keep our security commitments at the cathedral. We will make our reservations and pick up passes at the cathedral. We have no mailing address. Well, that's understandable. Now, I know who you are, and we'll be contacting you. Claremont. Doc, last night we were up all night, spraying down our house and property and waiting our evacuation order. We live in North Claremont, and through sudden swirling hot winds and raining black ash, we watched the wall of fire approach very near, with fire engines and crews and strike teams all around our block. We then witnessed the wall of fire split in two like the parting of the Red Sea and pass our immediate area on either side and move past us. With about 1.5 hours of smoke-filled sleep, we made it to the cathedral today, thanks be to God, thinking that if we be faithful no matter what and see to God's work, He'll take care of us and ours. Thank you for teaching us this. Pray for us. You may be sure of that. There are still fires and hot spots all around us. Moorpark. Thank you very much for your concern, Pastor. Moorpark Park and surrounding areas are very much under fire. We've had a few intense moments, and I had to pack a few things, but I've unpacked my computer, and I'm checking in for passes. I want all the people in our congregation to let me know your condition. We had volunteers all afternoon. In fact, maybe those three women who did the tweet were so still tuned in on watching for rattlesnakes and poison oak that they haven't yet recovered. We had volunteers all afternoon. Up at the ranch has been so much a part of our programming over the years. Clearing, well, it's pretty good condition anyway, but as it moves west from Claremont and moves on toward Duarte and Monrovia, if it comes across those hills, then Silver Oaks Ranch is in danger. And we were practicing what I preach. Paul preached it. Having done all, therefore stand. So we pulled our staff clearing brush and fire hazards all afternoon. And then at dark, set out to get here to this program. And those three ladies went from cutting brush. I think that's funny. I think that's funny. We have brush cutting women. From cutting brush to picking tweet songs. So that's a transition that's pretty tough, so I guess it's forgivable. But I would think after cutting brush and looking out for rattlesnakes and poison oak, they'd be playing Waylon Jennings and man songs. You think that's a direct enough hint? I really want to know your condition in the fire, and I'm grateful that I've been preaching these 28 years. God's on the corner before you get there. Bless men go through valleys of weeping, and I've taught you from Psalm 84 how to do it. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee. Marty said it very well. They've got God, and this is a new beginning. And there's nothing in times of tragedy more valuable than solid, based, on the word, faith in a God who promised never to leave us or forsake us, and he will see you through. Now get on the phone, anybody else that has reports, and keep making your reservations. Now, I want to say something. You know, I get sort of sick to my stomach when I see two boxers on each side of the ring, each of them praying to win. And God doesn't have to make the choice based on you praying. You pray, then neither one of you get killed or permanently injured. You pray for strength. God takes you through it and do your best. Now, the relevance is, I'm one pastor that says, the same faith in couples, and if I keep clearing my throat, I've been out in the smoke today. So I've said that once, and don't worry about it now. Because I'll get through this. And I'm sure a lot of you have been breathing smoke, clearing your throat too. I want to make it clear, among our congregation and among Christians, praying Christians everywhere, two different families with equal faith and equal dedication and praying to God. One of them can have their house burned, the other one, the flames go around it. Now let me make one more step and make the application. Remember when Jesus confronted Peter on Galilee after the resurrection? And he said, Peter, you've done what you wanted all your life. You've been your own boss in essence. But another's going to grab you. I'm sorry I'm saying this right at the station break, but I'm going to finish. Another's going to grab you and lead you to death. And Peter, being the Apostle Peter, looked over at John and says, what about him? And Jesus said, what is that to thee? If he live till I come again, what's that to thee? The messages of faith I preach, as thy day so shall thy strength be. The steps of a good man are ordered to the Lord. The God of the forefront, who's on the corner before we get there, is our refuge. And God knows what each of us are capable of and what each of us are not capable of. He will not tempt us beyond what we're able. He's in control. And the important thing that he wants from us is that we learn more and more to trust him. I cringed when I heard on the news, in fact, I was ashamed that Pat Robertson was speaking to the hurricane, the last one that went up the coast, and saying, "We're men of faith. I speak to the wind." And he got all wet. God's in control. We're not in control. And the only time you can speak with authority in what you say, you can count on coming to pass, is when you're speaking what God has already said in his word. And you'll never get any special revelations until you're acting on the universal revelation. Or at least you can't count on special revelations until you act on what God has said to all of us. I don't want Christians who lose their home to think they're second-class citizens. And I don't want those that God spares to fail to give thanks to God and rejoice that in this time of tragedy, you were spared. Doesn't make you a better Christian. Doesn't make you a better faither. Doesn't make me a better Christian because I dived into the Word until my faith rose to the amen level. And God healed me of cancer without surgery and radiation. And doesn't make me a second-class citizen, not able to stand at the mercy seat, as I learned that it's harder to keep a healing than it is to get one. Because the intensity of fresh diving into God's book that the crisis forces you to do, from which faith comes, that intensity and disciplined practice of faith building, feeding on the Word, wanes when the crisis wanes. It just means that faith cometh by hearing, hearing with the Word of God, and on my particular need, and with the congregation praying, my faith rose to the amen level, and God responded. Another doesn't happen. I think it's important that all of you and we as a congregation pray. I do think there's certain promises that some of the congregation have taken and others haven't. Let me just name one, the promise of the first fruits, of the angel that goes before you. All my congregation doesn't tithe. I feel sorry for them. There's not supposed to be anybody in this room doesn't tithe. But I'm not the one who is to decide where the curse hits one, blessing hits the other. We are all in Christ by faith. And you are to come out of your experience a better faither. And if sparing your home produces that in your case, and taking the home in the other case, you still have God. And blessed is the man whose strength is in thee. Don't let your blessings make you proud, and don't let your tragedy make you doubt. Remember that as the days roll on in this crisis. I get on telephone. Los Alamitos. I agree, Pastor, about the... Let's start with a charge, not a tweet. I'm going to be bringing a guest from Costa Rica next Sunday. Thank you for the privilege of being a voice of faith. Here's Alden Inn. Our reservations are in. I'm with you all the way, Pastor. I listened to your advice years ago. My husband's much smarter than I am, and he's there tonight with you. Thank God for all your teaching. Karina, commitments are made. I'll be at my post in the morning with no tweet. Moore Park, reservations are in. Hello, Pastor. was stuck at home today due to the fire and freeway closures and watched the service over the internet. We had a couple of close calls today that I knew would be okay because I have some of Doc's artwork framed on my wall, and I knew God would not let Doc go up in smoke. Well, he did at the other place, but I got replacements. I got replacements. That's the easiest thing I can do. See you on Sunday. I do think that the congregation should follow Paul's advice, who, as he closed the Philippian letter, said, pray for all kinds of prayers and for all the saints. It was the combined prayer of this worldwide congregation that wouldn't turn loose when 3 years ago, this very month, the doctors looked at me and my wife and said, I'll give you 10 to 12 months to live in a very painful death without immediate surgery and or radiation. Well, I ain't dead. Don't look dead. Don't act dead. Ain't got no cancer. And God heal me. But you fasted and you prayed. And I think our congregation should fast and pray with the same intensity for the protection on everybody. But that's why God puts a church together. We become a body, a part of the full body of Christ, but it spreads the combinations where two or three of you agree is touching anything. It's not just simple agreement. It's that intensity of faith and intensity of love that recognizes we're members of one another in a combined calling to get His word out. And the prayer of faith will not only save the sick, can save people in danger of this fire. As I said earlier, God's still in control. He knows what each of you need. But Hezekiah changed God's mind when God announced he was going to die. The power of prayer combined needs to be turned loose in this Holocaust for every person that's a part of this ministry. Say, isn't that being selfish? Sure it is. And I remember Ronald Niebuhr once posing the question, well, if you really had the love of God, wouldn't you love an orphan you don't know in China as much as your own child? You ought to. That's why the God gave you your child. Don't be spiritual to the point of idiocy. We're a spiritual family combined together, as Paul said to the Romans, to search out hearers of faith and supporting this ministry around the world. Therefore, I'm the under-shepherd of this congregation, and you come first to me. There's a lot of women in the world, but my wife's my wife. She calls, I come running. This congregation was my wife till she came along. Now I'm a bigamist. Married to you and to her. And sorry, she's moved ahead. You're second. No, you're third. God first, she's second, you're third. Got that? We need to pray for one another. So let me know and let me have the assurance as you're making your calls, you're going to do that. There are people watching right now, listening right now, not in the fat path of the fire that could be there tomorrow. Will you do it?
Yes, sir.
I get on the telephone. I am from Sunland. Thank you for being there. My message is the trees around my house are burning. The good news is I'll now be able to get the satellite signal. I like the quality of people that have developed under the word these years. San Bernardino, my commitments have been made. I was evacuated yesterday. I returned home quickly after only 2 hours. Thank you for your concern. I repeat to that couple that lost their home and their belongings, and their greatest loss, they said, was the lithos, of which every painting that I've sold prints on and sold out. But I have artist proof that I can turn into numbered prints. So all they have to do is tell me the number of their print, or we'll research it and find it. I'll replace the prints, check the catalog of tapes. You know, the ones that you had or the ones that meant the most, whatever. We'll replace them for no charge to you. And to that couple without a home, we just happen to have a few houses we can let you live in until you find a place, so we'll be contacting them. You're not alone. I can't do this ministry without you. Now's the time to reciprocate. Azusa, Firewise, we're fine here. I'd like passes for next Sunday. I'm glad this man's around the world telling about the atonement. Well, so am I. No more calls. You're going to hear a lot about the Da Vinci Code. Any of you heard about it? It's a current craze in chat rooms, on the internet. I saw an ad, and I told the studio, I think it's on Monday, some program is going to play on one of the stations locally, the Da Vinci Code. Something that could destroy or shake the church up. Well, better than a novel has been tried on that. But I want to bring it up tonight because it's a bestseller. And I want to make clear before the spectacular magazine type TV shows somehow convince you that the church is going to fall over something like this, or that there's some conspiracy that the church doesn't want the world to know about. You'd be better off to listen to me pull apart the words of the New Testament. But I'm going to... It's a fun book, and it's an interesting book. But how many of you remember when I spent and caused all bookstores far and wide to sell out of Holy Blood, Holy Grail? Those BBC reporters that were following the mystery in the south of France of the little priest that was repairing a church to Mary Magdalene, and all the relics of Mary and Martha and Lazarus are in the south of France. And he discovered something. And he went to Rome with it. And he came back spending money until his postage bill was bigger than his entire... He spent more on postage every year than his entire salary. And nobody could figure the secret. Remember Holy Blood, Holy Grail? And he traced the legend that Mary Magdalene had had a natural son by Jesus in the south of France, and this secret bloodline was maintained by the Priori de Sion, and this secret society in France would one day trace its lineage back to the King of Kings and would rise in power. And the Holy Grail that people sought changed one letter from Sang Grail, Holy Grail, to Sang Rail, Holy Blood. And this was the Holy Grail, finding that bloodline of the natural son of Jesus through Mary Magdalene. And you remember the knights, when I would lead you to the point this wicked lover crept. Remember that? Well, I'll give these Britishers, though they delved into a lot of speculation and secret societies and great mysteries, theirs was scholarship and fact, and they made clear when they interpreted. Lest this ride on that, I want to tell you, it's a novel. You got that? It's a novel. It's fictitious. By Dan Brown, The Da Vinci Code. Get ready, bookstores. All my secret watchers are going to descend. Dan Brown, the author, he makes very clear there are some facts in this book. The Priory of Sion, a European secret society founded in 1099, is a real organization. In 1975, Paris's Bibliothèque Nationale discovered parchments known as the secret dossiers, identifying numerous members of the Priory of Zion, including Sir Isaac Newton, Botticelli, Victor Hugo, and Leonardo da Vinci. The Vatican Prelature, known as Opus Dei, is a deeply devout Catholic sect that has been the topic of recent controversy due to reports of brainwashing, coercion, and a dangerous practice known as corporal mortification. Opus Dei has just completed construction of a 47 million national headquarters at 243 Lexington Avenue in New York City. All descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in this novel are accurate. I'll show you why that it attracts respectful attention. This is a novel that's a little above the cut of paperback romance novels. This has got some good stuff in it. For example, it opens with a devout, fanatical, Catholic, fictitious member of the real Opus Dei. And a priest in the Louvre who is fleeing from an attack of this assassin, and he's able to grab $1 million work of art on the wall and pull it back on him, and that sets off the alarms and the gates drop that can't open again in the section he's in. But the assassin is outside and shoots him in the stomach. And he can't get out the gate, and there's no way to open the gate. And the murderer is going to shoot him in the head and clicks on an empty chamber because he's already fired too many shots. And the man is dying. He strips himself naked as he's dying, spread eagles himself in that marvelous anatomical posture of the Vitruvian man that Leonardo has painted, and has a pen that only shows, is what they mark artworks that need to be restored, that only shows up when it leaves a mark under black light. He draws the circle around himself, and in essence, in his position, he forms the pentacle, which is in modern times often associated with devil worship, but it has a more respectful history behind it, and the mysterious orbit of Venus that forms a pentacle in the sky every 8 years is the basis of the Olympic Games originally, and the basis of the Olympic rings that originally was to be a pentacle, but then they decided to put them in the form of rings. So it's got some solid stuff behind it. Draws the circle perfectly around himself and his posture, lying there naked as he bleeds to death from the stomach wound, forms the pentacle, and he writes a code. 13-3-2-21-1-1-8-5, and writes in English, though French was his native tongue. O draconian devil, O lame saint, and some other words underneath the code. that come out later in the book. And these numbers, because this is going to end up a pretty high-powered mathematical bit of information. The rest of the message, some Paris policeman, detective, who thought that he had the possible murderer, he's written the name of a guy named Langdon, who's the hero of the book, who is a world expert on art and mystical things in history, the pentacle and various religious symbols, and written many books and lectures often around the world, and is actually in Paris to deliver a lecture at this time. His name is put down at the bottom. Robert Langdon, professor of religious symbology, Harvard University. That's not fact. That's part of the fiction. And they had taken off his name because he was the suspect, and he's called on in the middle of the night, got there, and then the story takes off. But these numbers, one can be rearranged, and they fall exactly into the form of 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21. Now, this is what's known as the succession of numbers, which is Fibonacci's famous sequence. Mathematician Leonardo Fibonacci created this succession of numbers in the 13th century. And it's obvious that there's no coincidence that all the numbers that Sonnier, the murdered priest, wrote on the floor belong to Fibonacci's famous sequence. Now, this sequence is very simple. That as you look at the numbers arranged that way, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, each number is the sum of the two numbers that preceded it. 1, 1, 2 is the sum of the two 1, 1s. 3 is the sum of 1, 2. And 5 is the sum of 2, 3. And 8 is the sum of 3, 5, etc. This is a very famous mathematical sequence. And this guy Langdon is a mathematical genius. And you come to a sequence where he's doing a phase back in his mind of a class that he was, his mind suddenly reeled back, because part of this code includes PHI, what had been erased because they wanted to trap Langdon without him knowing the rest of the message, thinking all the detective wanted to do was get him for murder. But Sonnier left, and of course there were three other people that knew some secret that this fanatic from Opus Dei was looking after, and they had all pledged themselves that if they died or were threatened, they would not reveal a secret. But they would reveal, they had each pledged to tell a lie as to where the secret was that this Opus Dei representative is seeking for. He had already killed the other three, and he asked Sonnier to confirm, and Sonnier told the lie. And all of them facing death stuck to the lie, which was to say this is where this secret thing is hidden. And then he was shot. And because it was four of them confirming it, you want to read the mystery book now, I'm sure. Part of the numbers come out to a number, and he weaves the mathematical pattern here. And when he came upon these letters, PHI, as part of the missing part of the code, because as the story moves on, he's able to find a copy of what was written, a picture that was taken before, on blacklight, before the detective erased the portion that included these letters. And they end up, he found himself suddenly reeling back to Harvard, standing in front of his symbolism and art class, writing his favorite number on the chalkboard. This is going to be fact. And I have something I want to draw from it. But I'm illustrating that it's a pretty well-written book, and it's going to go on to some secret message that I guess, if I read the crawls properly and the ads of some program this week, this code is what the church doesn't want the world to know and going to shake the church. But he found himself reeling back when he encountered the PHI, standing in front of his symbolism and art class, writing his favorite number on the chalkboard. Write it down. 1.618. Langdon turned, and this is not novel, this is part of the novel, but the facts I'm going to read are true. Langdon turned to face his sea of eager students. Who can tell me what this number is? A long-legged math major in back raised his hand. That's the number phi. Of course, he pronounced it phi. Nice job, Stettner, Langdon said. Everyone, meet phi, P-H-I. Not to be confused with pi, P-I. Stettner added, grinning, as we mathematicians like to say, phi is one H of a lot cooler than pi. Langdon laughed, but nobody else seemed to get the joke. Stettner slumped. This number phi, Langdon continued, 1.618, is a very important number in art. Who can tell me why? Stettner tried to redeem himself, because it's so pretty. Everybody laughed. Actually, Langdon said, Stettner's right again. Phi is generally considered the most beautiful number in the universe. The laughter abruptly stopped, and Stettner gloated. As Langdon loaded his slide projector, he explained that the number phi was derived from the Fibonacci sequence, a progression famous not only because the sum of adjacent terms equal the next term, but because the quotients of adjacent terms possess the astonishing property of approaching the number 1.6185. Despite phi's seemingly mystical mathematical origins, Langdon explained, the truly mind-boggling aspect of phi was its role as a fundamental building block in nature. I bet a lot of you don't know this. Plants, animals, and even human beings all possessed dimensional properties that adhered with eerie exactitude to the ratio of phi to 1. Phi's ubiquity in nature, Langdon said, killing the lights, clearly exceeds coincidence. And so the ancients assumed the number phi must have been preordained by the creator of the universe. Now, you're already beginning back to the first chapters of Romans, intelligent design versus ancients assumed the number phi must have been preordained by the creator of the universe. Early scientists heralded 1.618 as the divine proportion. Hold on, said a young woman in the front row. I'm a bio major, and I've never seen this divine proportion in nature. No, Langdon grinned. Ever study the relationship between females and males in the honeybee community? Sure. The female bees always outnumber the male bees. Correct. And did you know that if you divide the number of female bees by the number of male bees in any beehive in the world, you always get the same number? You do. Yep, phi. The girl gaped. No way! Way? Langdon fired back, smiling as he projected the slide of a sparrow seashell. Recognize this? It's a nautilus, the bio major said. A cephalopod mollusk that pumps gas into its chambered shell to adjust its buoyancy. Correct. And can you guess what the ratio is of each spiral's diameter to the next? The girl looked uncertain as she eyed the concentric arcs of the nautilus spiral. Langdon nodded. Phi, the divine proportion, 1.618 to 1. The girl looked amazed. Langdon advanced to the next slide, a close-up of a sunflower seed head. Sunflower seeds grow in opposing spirals. Can you guess the ratio of each rotation's diameter to the next? Phi, everyone said. Bingo, Langdon began racing through the slides now. Spiraled pine cone petals, leaf arrangement on plant stalks, insect segmentation, all displaying astonishing obedience to the divine proportion. This is amazing, someone cried out. Yeah, someone else said, but what does it have to do with art? Aha, Langdon said, glad you ask. He pulled up another slide, a pale yellow parchment displaying Leonardo da Vinci's famous male nude, the Vitruvian Man, named for Marcus Vitruvius, the brilliant Roman architect who praised the divine proportion in his text, De Architectura. Nobody understood better than da Vinci the divine structure of the human body. Da Vinci actually exhumed corpses to measure the exact proportions of human bone structure. He was the first to show that the human body is literally made of building blocks whose proportional ratios always equal phi. Everyone in class gave him a dubious look. "Don't believe me," Langdon challenged. "Next time you're in the shower, take a tape measure." A couple of football players snickered. "Not just you insecure jocks," Langdon prompted. "All of you, guys and girls, try it. Measure the distance from the tip of your head to the floor. Then divide that distance from your belly button to the floor. Guess what number you get?" "Not phi," one of the jocks blurted out in disbelief. "Yes, phi. 1.618. "Want another example? Measure the distance from your shoulder to your fingertips, and then divide it by the distance from your elbow to your fingertips. Phi again. Another. Hip to the floor, divided by knee to the floor. Phi again. Finger joints, toes, spinal divisions, phi, phi, phi. My friends, each of you is a walking tribute to the divine proportion." What I'm telling you is, it's a well-written book. Got some interesting stuff in it. Tell me that we all evolved that way. Intelligent design. So, you know, have fun with the book, but it's a novel, and the church is not going to fall down because of what this professor from Harvard, fictitious in this book, finds as he traces this code and its codes that lead him to the Da Vinci Code. Now go buy the bookstores out. Get on the phone. Make your reservations. Come on.